tragedy.
You, is a text enough? That's what she's saying. So they all sent texts and they all did that, and that was great. And then when we actually met face to face, no one said anything. How are you doing? Nothing like that. It made me feel like they didn't really care. Like they did that out of duty. Sorry that happened. And I've been guilty of this as well. Whenever there's something, I'll send a quick note. Hey, sorry about that. But then when we're together, when I see them, you know, stuff starts to go through your mind. Well, I'm sure they're tired of hearing, how are you doing? I'm sure it's just not the time or place to ask about this, and we never mention it. Well, Megan M. feels that way. Well, for better or for worse. Anybody remember this? This guy named Coney?
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's what happened. In 2012, a marketing company adopted a current cause: vulnerable children in war-torn country being kidnapped and turned into soldiers. They designated a campaign for this to raise awareness. And when they launched their mission, people all over the world passionately took up their rallying cry, Coney. Coney 2012. For days, even weeks, it seemed like the campaign was all everybody talked about. It was everywhere online, picked up in the news cycles, and after a few months, the producer, who was the mastermind behind the whole thing, fell into some personal challenges. And that was the news for the week. The whole thing, Coney 2012, and the news about its producer just sort of went away. But at the time, it was something that was like, okay, you gotta click, you gotta retweet, you gotta redo all this, because this is a big, huge thing. And then it just went away. And I don't know if you remember this or not. Some of you may have seen this or something like that. But Coney 2012, join the revolution. Another example. Or how about this one? I don't know if you remember this or not. 200 girls were kidnapped from Nigeria and they disappeared into the jungle. 200 girls, right? And it's like an Islamic State group came and took them. And they disappeared. Some escaped, told their story within a few days, and it captured the heart of the entire globe. The whole world heard their story. Everyone wondered, what can I do for them? How can I help the situation? For a while, it was on everybody's mind. And it's all you could do is hear about this and that. But then it sort of just went away. The First Lady even had a hashtag campaign. Hashtag bring back our girls. And then it just went away. Kind of weird. Just sort of left. I'm going to show you a quick video in just a second. Man. Yes, there it is. Hopefully this will work. Or maybe this one. This is more recent. The Ice Bucket Challenge. And I'm not at all saying it was wrong or bad or anything like that. It's just an observation. That's all. Who could forget the Ice Bucket Challenge? You remember what the Ice Bucket Challenge was for? Anybody?
ALS.
ALS. And what is ALS?
Some sort of disease.
Some sort of disease. Lou Gehrig's disease.
Yeah.
Lou Gehrig's disease. It's commonly called. But yeah, you knew what it was. So ALS. Yes. That's good. And that's actually, this one was very successful on one level. Like, I think they raised a couple million for this because of that. So, video after video, people dumping buckets of ice on each other's heads. And I thought the funniest part was they had the fails like a couple months later. And it was even funnier. People would be like over two-story, you know, the person on the ground, the person on the two-story, second story. I'm doing this for, and then like the thing would slip and it hit him in the head and they were fine, but those were even better. It was all about ALS. And it did, in fact, generate millions and millions of dollars for research. And then it just went away. It was sort of like the flavor of the week and it just went out. People quit doing it. People quit talking about ALS shortly after it exploded to the scene, and no doubt good came from those internet campaigns, but there's some downsides to this. There's some downsides to this, this whole thing. What are some of the downsides? In particular, evidence seems to indicate a strong correlation between sharing popular videos and actually the decline of compassion as a shared cultural value. So the more, weirdly enough, and I'll explain how this happens, this is a big deal. Compassion actually goes down in certain areas. Some causes or crisis shifts into the spotlight of popular culture for a brief 15 minutes of fame, and then people lose interest when something else comes along. If this new thing somehow means the first issue is no longer significant or worth pursuing, it's as if everything becomes popular and then it's discarded. It might be interesting for a while, but then no one wants to touch it or move on, you know. It reminds me of this scene from a show called Arrested Development. I'll show you this scene. Let me set this up. They're throwing a surprise party for this guy. He is he's done something very good for the family. So the family decides they're going to have this good, well, we're going to recognize you for your greatness. And they surprise him with it. And then everybody start going around the room about how awesome everybody else was. And it turned into this big thing. And here's how it goes.
Speech. The family continued to chant speech, speech, speech for no one in particular.
That scene sums up what happens after there's an internet campaign. They all were like, speech, yeah, do it, do it. And then we didn't know who we were asking to do this. Oh, they all kind of like awkwardly go back to what we were doing before. That reminds me of how some of these internet campaigns can go sometimes. scene ends with them just looking at one another out of sheer awkwardness. The whole social media campaign to raise awareness and bring about good things, it's great, but it's sort of awkward afterwards. No one has the guts to say, to be the jerk and go, okay, now on to other things. That's kind of old. So, University of Michigan. There's no Wolverine fans in here, right? No? Okay. University of Michigan, they conducted a study of attitudes among college students starting in 1980, or was it 79? 1980, 1979, all the way to 2009. That would be 30 years? Yes. So, 30-year study, each incoming class of freshmen, they'd ask them certain questions, and it would generate how much compassion they felt for others. The average student cared in 2009. Well, do you think empathy, first off, what is empathy? What is that? It's a big word. Concern for others. The ability to get out of your own view and see someone else from a different perspective, to care for them. Do you think that has gone up or down in the past 30 years? You think it's gone down? Okay. Judging on the questions they asked these incoming freshmen from 79 all the way to 2009, it has gone down 40%. 40%. And you might think, well, how did they get that? I mean, what are they asking? Here's some things. Here's some examples of the statements they used. I sometimes try to understand my friends better by imagining how things look from their perspective. The nevers became more and more, like, no, don't do that. That became more and more frequent. 2009, it was 40% more frequent. Number two, I often have concerned feelings for people less fortunate than myself. Never. 40% up. No, not really. So responses to those two questions were down between 1980 and 2009. The very first few years of the study started to show a steep decline, but it really dropped right at the year 2006, 2007. Now, why would this drop severely? Like it was, people were kind of going a little bit down, but it really shot down 2006, 2007. Why would it go down? You're actually onto something. That's the first year the iPhone came out, 2007. And that's when they noticed, we got a relationship here between care and concern for others and this technology that's coming out. The researchers reasoned that technology played a huge role in the decline of empathy since 2007, or at 2007. And hear me out, I'm not saying that I'm friends with all of you on one level or another on social media, so I'm not saying you don't care for people if you use that. That's not it. But as a culture, it has gone severely down. Why would engaging yourself in social media cause you to care less about people? Why is that? Think it'd be more, right? Oh, Granny's cat picture. Wow, like, yep. Hey, Bobby got a new car. Awesome. Why would it cause care and concern to go down, though?
After you see your little stuff, you start to be like, that's not really that important. Why'd they have to share that?
Very, very good. Very good. Yep. Yep. First off, social media encourages us to be about ourselves. It encourages us to be about ourselves. You can call it narcissism, vanity, or just full of yourself. It promotes us to the level of someone important. Someone who has something to say, something to shout. And I'm not at all saying anybody in this room fits that category of, I am a person of importance and I'll use this platform to prove it. No, I'm not saying that. But as a culture, that's what it does. It promotes us to the level of someone important. Nowhere do we find this to be the case more than the good old selfie. The good old selfie. Let's break this one down a little bit. There's the early stage of a duck, looks like. The many, many selfies. There's a few selfies out there. Number one, driving my car selfie. I wouldn't recommend that one. Number two, the duck face. Number three, me and my old, my BFF selfie. Number four, me and my pet selfie. Number five, we've got great seats at the game selfie. Number six, the me and this amazing food selfie. Number seven, rocking that outfit, girlfriend, selfie. That's about all I could really come up with. There's a few more, which I'm at the game selfie.
Teaching your grandparents how to selfie.
Yeah.
One time we walked in and my grandpa was just taking a selfie. So. Not kidding. But he was like...
And if he held his finger on the button, it'd be like 200 on the roll of. Yeah.
He's taking a selfie of me. It's hilarious.
Notice the thing that creeps into the selfie. It's mainly about the person taking the picture. It's mainly about them, right? Social media trains us on one level to be about ourselves. One study I read indicated that 80% of what a user posts on social media is directly related to their own interest only. And I don't know, that's probably true. Think about it. If I'm interested in something, I'm more likely to think you'll be. I've done this with like a good book I'm reading from whatever. It's usually Christian related. I'll be like, man, I got to share that. And you know, you think people will be like, ooh, that's so good. But I forget that I have some friends, many friends, who are not even believers, who kind of found out, mock me behind closed doors about that. Like, all he posts is that Tim Keller stuff. Can't believe he believes that. Oh, I'm assuming you're like digging this like I am. No, you still have unbelief in your heart. And I'm not really thinking along those lines. I don't think you should, but I just forget that sometimes. Social media, if not checked, actually trains us like lab rats tapping a feeder bar to become more and more self-centered over time. But how does it train us to care less about people? That's the question. How does it actually train us to care less about people? Well, this is where it trains us to be less compassionate. It turns pain, it turns personal tragedy into popular causes that are abandoned kind of easily. This is Ebola. I've got to get some more software. This is an Ebola situation. I think actually she was okay. They were just getting her out of the village. As you can see, the people there have some serious gear on because you had to do that. And it was a big deal, what, about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago? Something like that. It was really like, we've got people here in America with this. Look out. But it turns personal tragedy and into popular causes. Second, it makes us more obsessed with ourselves. We can become desensitized over time if we don't watch it. You know what the term desensitized means? You know what that kind of means? Okay, it'd be like this. Just for example, Thomas, he really wants to watch Star Wars, but I know how this song and dance goes. He's going to watch it and have bad dreams because of Darth Vader. So we're saying no. And we do that with most things that are kind of not really violent, but probably violent for a 3-year-old. So we're saying like 5 you can watch, or 6, something like that. You know, a little bit older. Well, let's just say he goes off to someone's house. He's a pretty gentle child, I think. Let's say he goes to someone's house and just like, they let him watch whatever for the whole day. He's going to come back a little different. He's probably going to be rougher with his toys. Why? Because he's desensitized to violence to a little degree. Well, we can do that with personal trauma, tragedy, stuff like that. If we're not careful, when we see pain all over our news feed and participate in it over time, if there's a cause going on, we can get numb to the reality of it. The more we see pain, the harder it is for us to care each time we're exposed to it. This is how it is. The more we're exposed to personal pain, the more we kind of become like it's not such a big deal over time. Using social media can do this. So, social media presents its content as if all messages are equal. It presents its content as if everything's equal. So, this young lady with, you know, fighting Ebola, life-threatening, and it could become a global epidemic. And you could scroll right under there to the Numa Numa guy. You know what I'm talking about? No? Okay. Yeah, that guy. It kind of makes everything a level playing ground. So, tragedy, and then some kid with a lightsaber who trips and falls. That was a big one a couple years ago, too. A tweet from your favorite singer might come in with a text from your grandmother. A news feed about some new virus in Africa, and a meeting invitation. Each message has the same amount of screen real estate, same kind of structure, and even the same color and fonts. And when Messenger appears that way, when messages appear that way, our brains can't tell the difference between importance. We just see it as all equally important. What's the most important thing here? Carrie Underwood, Grandma, Ebola, e-invitation to a party, whatever. You know, it all becomes equal if you don't watch it. Just something to be aware of. And fourth, everything is seen from a distance. That's another danger of social media. Technology can cause us to care less about people because we don't have direct contact with them. We simply see them from the view of a screen, no eye contact. Let's say tragedy hits you and you post about it and you get a bunch of, I'm so sorry, I'm praying for you. You know, let's say you actually are meeting with someone and you share with them what just happened to you. Well, all the details about the tragedy will come out and the person will say, what are you going to do about this? How can I help you with that? The personal connection will move more compassion out of that other person, as opposed to the conversation will be deeper than I'm praying for you. You know, there's nothing wrong with I'm praying for you. But I would challenge you to go be more proactive after that I'm praying for you and say, okay, seriously, what can I do for you? You know, that would probably speak more volume than I'm really sorry. Although sometimes, let's just be honest, because of time constraints, because of distance, that's all you can do, right? So I'm not saying you can never, ever do that. From afar, it's easier to disconnect, to walk away, because I don't want to feel the pain. When we're relating face-to-face with each other in an intimate setting, I'm participating in what's happening. Across social media, I'm just one more observer. Watching as your life drifts by on my news feed. So, when we relate from a distance, we actually end up caring less. God will not settle for this on how we care for one another. He will not settle for that being the only way we care for one another. The Greek word for compassion has to do with our insides. And that's all I'll leave it, because it's kind of gross, all right? The Greek word for compassion, just think guts, inside. And why would that be? It means to be moved from your insides. Like you're moved from something inside that you can't put it down. It's just always there and it's making you do something. So people who wrote the New Testament believe that compassion originated from your insides. And that was the deepest part of your body. So they described an ache and empathy to another person. It was almost painful. You had to do something. You feel so strongly about something, you're so moved into action. True compassion always will have some form of action behind it. True compassion will always have some form of action behind it. And the argument so far is just this. It's far easier just to write hashtag whatever the cause could be than to actually get involved with it. But you get the same recognition from doing hashtag whatever as you would of actually doing it. Clicking isn't necessarily caring. It really doesn't change anything if you want to break it down a bit. So Mark 1, let's go there. Mark 1, 40 through 42. I promise you, I'm not trying to like slap you upside the head with like social media is just horrible. It's from the devil or anything, nothing like that. It's just it has the potential to do this, to actually make you care less. I'm doing the leading in worship here. That's why, hence the suit. I haven't worn it in 3 years. There's a receipt in there from many, many moons ago. All right, Matthew, Mark. Jesus felt deeply something within him, and that prompted him to action. Jesus felt something deep within him, and that prompted him to action. All right. Here we go. Mark 1, 40 through 42. Here's how it goes. And a leper came to him, imploring him and kneeling and said to him, "If you will, you can make me clean." Moved with pity, he stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, "I will be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him and he was made clean. You get that pattern? It wasn't just, "Man, so sorry." There. It was moved within him. He actually did it. Moved within him. Let's go to another in Matthew 20. Should be like a page, maybe two or three behind that. Matthew 20, 29 through 30. Here's how that goes. And as they went out of Jericho, a great crowd followed him. And behold, there were two blind men sitting by the roadside. And when they heard that Jesus was passing by, they cried out, "Lord, have mercy on us, God of David." The crowd rebuked him, telling them to be silent. But they cried out all the more, "Lord, have mercy on us, Son of David." And stopping, Jesus called them and said, "What do you want me to do for you?" They said to him, "Lord, let our eyes be opened." And Jesus, in pity, touched their eyes, and immediately they recovered their sight and followed him. Both those instances are the word for insides causing you to do something. Something like that. So remember that stat, 40% less empathy as we're going on in time, moving on from the past generation. Here's the kicker. The more I obsess over social media, the more I care about, the less I care about other people. On the flip side, though, the more I care about Jesus, the more I'll try to get to know him, serve him, and draw close to him. You can't help but look at the life of Jesus and be challenged on it, on the face value. So remember, following Jesus involves a cross with your name on it. Compassion equals some form of sacrifice. And how easy is it, really, to type a hashtag in something and think that's the sacrifice? That's not so much sacrifice. Sacrifice involves way more than that. Here's a pastor story. The guy who wrote the book. It's wonderful. It's kind of long, so just hang with me for a second. Believe it or not, even though I'm a pastor, I don't feel like helping people 24/7. A few years ago, I'd been speaking all day in an event in another city. I was exhausted, and I found myself stuck in the Kansas City International Airport late one Thursday evening, waiting for a long-delayed connecting flight. All I could think about was how tired I was, and I wanted to get home to my family. I was sitting in one of those uncomfortable airport chairs away from the crowd, just trying to read quietly until the plane was ready. And all of a sudden, a woman was standing in front of me, trying to get my attention. She seemed excited. She seemed surprised. She said, "Oh my goodness, you're my pastor. I can't believe you're here." This is a big, huge church, so, that wouldn't be quite a big deal here, but, I mean, we're talking a couple thousands. "You're my pastor. You're here." I looked up. I forced a quick smile and chatted for a minute. After the small talk, it got awkward, and she finally went away with a forced, "Oh, okay, well, bye." I raised my book back up and tried to find where I'd left off, but then she interrupted me again. Maybe you've been in this situation, somewhere like this, where it's like, "Okay, all right, back to what I was doing." Okay, Well, that happens to pastors too. I had to force myself to close the book and then go looking for her because I was trying to pretend not to hear her. But the Spirit of God got a hold of me. I tried to track her down. I could. Sitting by herself, I saw her staring off into space. I cleared my throat and her face snapped up as she turned to look at me. I said, "Please forgive me, I'm really sorry, but I feel like you wanted to say something." She said, I sat down one chair over from her, and she immediately burst into tears. Her story came gushing out. She was dealing with huge amounts of shame from the previous night. She had way too much to drink and was unfaithful to her husband on that business trip. And she said, "I don't know what I'm going to do." Not knowing what to say, I started praying silently. And out of the blue, I offered, "Well, for whatever it's worth, I think God must really care about you. I don't think it's any coincidence that right here, right now, both of us have met. Do you think it's a coincidence?" She shook her head. "I guess not. I hope you're right." So I talked to her for a few minutes, then called a counselor that I know and put them on the phone together. They made an appointment to meet in person when she got home, and I talked to her for a while longer, probably 30 minutes. Finally, I told her, "Okay, now this is the hard part. You need to confess this to your husband." She agreed, and we agreed on a time she would do it, 10 a.m. Saturday. He had been on a trip as well. They'd both be home by then. So a couple days later, it was Saturday. I hadn't forgotten, but it wasn't like at the top of my mind either. His daughter had a dance rehearsal in that morning, and on the other side of town, he dropped her off, and then he remembered, "Oh yeah, it's 10 a.m. I need to pray." So just sitting there in my car, I prayed for the woman and her husband. And after a few minutes, I thought, "Well, I've got 2 hours to kill. What should I do?" So just started driving around, and then the thought suddenly came to me. "Oh, I know. I'll go to Walmart." I knew that there was one nearby, so I started making my way to Walmart. Now, understand this. I don't usually go to Walmart, really. I don't enjoy big stores like that. I'd rather go to a pet store and look at cats than go to Walmart. He doesn't like cats. It wasn't like I needed anything to buy. I just couldn't shake the idea that I needed to go to Walmart, so that's what I did. And honestly, even after I walked in, I was kind of just wandering around thinking, "This is really weird. What am I doing here?" I turned the corner and almost bumped into a guy. We stopped and looked at each other for a split second and said, "Oh, I'm sorry, excuse me." His mouth dropped open. He blurted, "You're my pastor. Can't believe you're here." He burst into tears, grabbed me, leaned his whole body weight against me, and started sobbing on my shoulder. Between heaves, he managed to get out. "Thursday night, you were Kansas City, airport. My wife was there. She confessed. She just told me this morning, I don't know what to do, so I came to Walmart, and you're here." So he met both the wife and the husband by a chance incident. When I realized who he was, I was so glad that his wife had interrupted me. I was so glad now he had interrupted me. I put my arm around him. I let him cry, and to be honest, I may have cried a little too. Then I said, "Let's ask you something. Do you realize how much God cares about you? Do you realize what he's just done for you? He delayed my flight and got me stuck in the same airport where your wife was so we could have the same conversation. Then he sent me here to Walmart on a Saturday morning as your pastor so I'd be here for you. I don't know what you're going to do, but I can tell you this. Your marriage must be really important to God. I won't lie to you. It'll be hard. But I believe with all my heart that he wants to heal your marriage." That story still amazes me. The couple is still together. They're going through counseling. He forgave her. They worked through their differences, and God healed their marriage. Let me ask you this, though. I'm so very thankful that God interrupted me that one day. And maybe we should look at our interruptions in the same way. You never know. Something of that thing. So before we just wrap it all up, let's just go one more story. Luke 10. Point of that story is don't miss divine opportunities that God puts in front of your face. Sometimes daily, sometimes multiple times a day. Selfishness actually stops those divine appointments. God places people in need right in front of your face. It's a big heart test. What will the response be? I don't have time for this, or I got this. Compassion always, 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 always costs you something. So, compassion requires action. Luke 10. "And behold, a lawyer stood up to put him to the test, saying, 'Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?' He said to him, 'What is written in the law? How do you read it?' And he said, 'You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself.' And he said to him, 'You've answered correctly. Do this and you will live.'" 29. "But he, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, 'Who is my neighbor?'" I mean, you catch what's going on here, right? He says, "Oh, love your neighbor. I mean, I can do that." Who is my neighbor? That neighbor guy. Well, Jesus replied, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. He fell among robbers who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now, by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, he passed on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. He went to him and bound up his wounds, poured oil and wine on him, sat him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, take care of him. Whatever more you spend, I'll repay you when I come back. Which one of those 3 do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among robbers? He said, the one who showed him mercy. He couldn't even say Samaritan. The one who showed him mercy. And Jesus said to him, you go and do likewise. Lost in this great story is this. It cost the guy a large amount of money. A large amount of money. Emotional investment, time, and all that. We read it and we're kind of used to it. We know the backstory. The Samaritans were half breeds between the Babylonians and the Israelites. And there's great stigma. There was all that other stuff. But what was lost in this? It was a huge cost to him. Huge. It's pretty amazing. Here's the rub. Compassion always costs. Compassion always costs. But too often in our culture, too often, we want drive-by compassion. It doesn't cost much. We're willing to do something for somebody so long as it's easy, so long as it's not an inconvenience to me. And God will not settle for that categorized as compassion. He would say, that is not compassion. That is easy drive-by compassion. That's not Good Samaritan kind of compassion. So social media sets up a culture where easy compassion is the rule, or can be. Clicking like or retweeting or sharing a link is really easy, but we can be tricked into thinking that's compassion. We can be tricked into thinking that's compassion. So as a pastor's son, let me just be real with you. I'll allow you to see my selfish side. I do have one. I sometimes would be out with my dad around town when I was a little boy. There were about 4 or 5 people who habitually called my dad in this small, small South Carolina town. 4 or 5 would call him. He would help them out and stayed in the same spot for years, right? The people would never change. They stayed in the same spot. I mean, talking like financially, all this other stuff. And my dad would always go out of his way to help them. I felt like he was just enabling them. So on top of that, as a kid, I felt like they stole my dad from me. Because we'd be playing out in the front yard, and all of a sudden the phone would ring. He'd answer it and say, I'll be back in a couple hours. I'd say, well, where are you going? Hey, don't worry, I'm going to church. Going to church? Are you helping? You know, that kind of thing happened. But in my immaturity, what I learned these many years later is this. True Christ-like compassion has a huge, huge price tag to it, and it's not easy. There's no such thing as a distance, easy, comfortable, Christ-like, sacrificial lifestyle. There's no such thing as that. Some people did wind up changing for the better after many years. But I realize you want to be used by God, it's not going to be easy. Facebook has a ton of causes, ton of ways to show compassion. But is it Christ-like type of compassion? I'm not saying you should never take up a cause. Of course, do it. That says something to the world. But don't let that count for, in your own mind, I've done my duty, or something like that. Do something. So again, here's how we end up everything. There's a call to do something. You do something out of response, not out of force. You respond with costly compassion because the compassion that saved you was costly. The Son of God had to die and be ignored for true compassion to visit us, the sinner. That should be in your head as you seek to show compassion to the sinner, to whoever it might be in your life. So that's how this sort of wraps up. I am in no way saying don't ever retweet anything for whatever. But don't let that count for I've done my Christian duty here. It's so easy to do that. And I think that's what the study proved in 2000 whatever, that empathy has gone down because I think all of us are, we're tempted to do that daily, to say, okay, I'm a selfless person because I did this. Yikes. Hold on. So anyway, let's pray. And again, I'll say it. 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for your word. Thank you so much for, we do thank you for social media and all the good causes that can come from that. I do pray for us, Lord, in this room that you would snap us to the reality, though, that just because we did this or that online, that is not the same as truly showing costly compassion. And Lord, I pray that you would put it in our hearts, in our minds, in our thoughts, the desire to truly, truly be these compassionate people you've called us to be, only as a response to what's been done for us. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. If I